G'day everyone, I am coming to you from another hotel room, which is, in a way, it's like a little bit of Groundhog Day because I've seen a lot of hotel rooms this year. But in another way, it's a hotel room without jet lag and the money makes sense and the coffee's good. So that's good news. So I'm in Sydney this week and if you recall last week, I was at home and I did one by the coffee machine and coffee machine was great. I said I should maybe do one near the beer fridge. Beer fridge would be ordinary. Instead, what I decided to do, because I, as you can probably tell by the darkened room here, I am doing this late, is it would be a beer episode. So I went and got a bunch of beers the other day because I went over to a mate's place for dinner, and I thought, oh, I should actually get some really like epic looking beers as well. I don't know how good this is going to be. It's Speedway Stout, Imperial Stout with coffee. It's also a largish can and it's 12%. So we are not going to be drinking this beer throughout the process of this weekly update, but I think I will be drinking some of it. Now, I'm conscious that I'm like pouring this into a glass and there's going to be like Belgian people watching this going, that's just not the right glass. You can't do that. I get very, very sensitive about the glasses in Belgium. However, it does still come up looking okay. It's very, very bloody good. Now, why do I need a big can of 12% beer right at the moment? It has been a very, very long week, and I want to tell you a little bit about what I've been doing this week. So, as I mentioned, I am in Sydney. Now, I drove to Sydney from the Gold Coast, where I live, on Saturday, and I did it in about 8 hours and 48 minutes, I think it was, and it's about 800 and, what was it, just over 800K. I averaged something like 96, 97K an hour, just for context. And now, incidentally, this is not driving like a bat out of hell either. We have mostly 100 and 110 zones all the way between here and the Gold Coast. A few little ordinary sections where they're doing a bunch of roadworks and things. A heap of people said, did you know that there are aeroplanes? Like, why didn't you fly? Now, I thought I'll answer it here. So I'm actually here in Sydney, having just done a couple of workshops I'm going to talk about, because it just sort of times out that I'm on the way to the snow, which is another 500K that way. And basically we've been going to the snow over winter for eons. Australia does have snow too, by the way. I appreciate this is a foreign concept to some people. Now, we used to live in Sydney and it'd be a 5-hour drive. No biggie, get up early one day, drive down, you know, stay there a week, whatever it may be. I'll turn off the noise on that one. And that was great. Now we're on the Gold Coast and it's actually like a 14-hour drive. So we could have flown. There's a couple of reasons why we don't. And one of them is we've got a lot of shit. So between Kylie and I and our two kids as well, everyone's got various ski and snowboard gear and stuff like that. It is a heap of stuff. Now we could travel with it and I will be going to the Northern Hemisphere to the snow later this year, so I have to. But it's a combination of all that stuff. Where we go, we do stay on the snow, but we often drive into the village where there's like water slides and stuff for the kids or to do some shopping, all this sort of stuff. So there's that. It does make life a little bit easier. And to be honest, I like the drive. Like the drive is actually really, really good. So it's nice for me just to sit there in a comfy car, chuck on the cruise control. I got one of those radar cruisers as well. So if you come up behind slow traffic, it just does a distance thing. I listen to a heap of podcasts. Now, what was the really good one I listened to? Was it Dark Reading? I think it was Dark Reading. And I apologize if I got that name wrong, because a heap of people, when I asked beforehand, I said, what new podcast should I listen to? They said, go and have a listen to this one because it's epic. Now, it was epic. And it turns out that I was in the second edition of it as well. Not me per se, I wasn't speaking, but it was about the VTech data breach, which I was heavily involved in. So it was kind of fun to listen to myself and actually hear a few things I didn't know about the aftermath of the incident in terms of the guy who got arrested and everything. I'll link through to that podcast. So anyway, I drive down. Now, because I was driving, what I try and do, and I've done this the last couple of years as well, is do other things along the way, hence why I'm in Sydney now. And you've pretty much got to drive through Sydney anyway to get to where I'm going. So what is it? Probably about 5 or 6 weeks ago, I put some tweets out and said, look, I'm going to be in Sydney. Anyone want to do workshops? I've just done two-day workshops. And they've been for customers here in Sydney where I've gone in and done the private workshop thing. they've gone great. I think I must be up to about 60 times of having done this workshop now, which partly explains why I need the beer. And look, it was the usual sort of hack yourself first stuff. There's actually a link to workshops up on my blog, which explains what I do in these. And it was all the same sort of usual workshoppy stuff. But there's always new stuff every single time. So for example, in the workshop the last couple of days, I've been talking about a particular data breach, which I'm going to explain in more detail very, very shortly. So those workshops were very good. And I'm going to go to Canberra tomorrow. And Canberra is a little bit like Washington, D.C. It's like the nation's capital, except it's like Washington, D.C. with just like heaps and heaps and heaps of roundabouts and people sort of living in this spot, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere, but also on the way to the snow. And all the government folks are there. So I'm going to go visit a bunch of government folks tomorrow. I'll see if there's anything out of that which I can then talk about and share later. But there's some really, really nice people there, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing them all. So that will be that. I'll go to the snow for a week, and then I'm going to do the whole thing in reverse. So I'm going to come back to Sydney, another two-day workshop. I've got a conference week after next. It's the SailPoint conference for anyone who is going to be around here then. And then I'll drive back to the Gold Coast again. So the reason why I drive is I get to do a bunch of other stuff along the way. I enjoy the peace and quiet. Good thing about driving, you're not doing any twittering for a very long time, other than like in the breaks or something in the middle. So that's that. That's what I've been doing. Now, incidentally, also, I have finally committed to some travel in October. I'm going to be going to Texas in October, and I want to tell you exactly what the dates are and where I'm going to be. So I am going to be in San Antonio on the 12th of October at the Texas Cyber Summit. And then the day after, on the weekend, 13th of October, I'm going to be in Dallas at the DevFest weekend. And if anyone is around San Antonio or Dallas then and wants to catch up and show me what life is like in Texas, I'm kind of interested. In fact, I'll have the day after free. So I will have Sunday the 14th free in Dallas. And I want to do some Texas stuff. And I have things in my like Australian mind of what happens in Texas. And I'm sure they're like totally wrong. But anyway, if you're around there, let me know. So that was that. Now, that is very good. The next thing, I want to start talking about data breaches. There's two data breaches I want to talk about. One is a data breach I have loaded already. Another is a data breach I'll be loading first thing tomorrow morning. So after I have recorded this, but it will be live, the data breach will be live before this thing goes live. And incidentally, I am doing this at night now because I've got to leave first thing tomorrow morning to get to Canberra in time to meet people there. And then we're going to go and do a bunch of stuff all day and have beer afterwards. And I really don't want to be doing this video tomorrow. So let's talk about adult fan fiction. How do we explain this one? Let me try and be as objective and fair as possible. And then you guys can make up your mind about how the whole thing actually sits morally, ethically. And I don't even mean morally or ethically in terms of what the site does. I frankly don't give a shit that they talk about Ewoks having sex or whatever it is. Like, that's their thing. That's fine. What I do care about is how they handle data breaches. Now, here's the chronology of this. And I'm actually going to look up an email here because I want to make sure that I actually get things right, because it's one of these ones that, if I'm honest, has gone a little bit off the rails. Adult fan fiction. Now, I had people, I'm pretty sure it was multiple people, send me data for a website called adult-fanfiction.org. Now, being quite serious about it, this appears to be a website where people can go and write adult fiction of a fantasy nature. And I believe it's related to mythical creatures and things that might have sex with each other or with other people. I don't know. I didn't really go that deep into what they're actually talking about. I really don't care. And it's the same sort of thing as the way I dealt with the Ashley Madison breach. I am not into adultery myself. I don't really care what other people do with their free time. I'm just more interested in what other people other than my wife do with their free time. I'm just more interested in what actually happened. What does the data tell us? What was the incident? How are we now going to deal with it? So, the adult fan fiction thing. Now, I had this data breach and I validated the authenticity of it in all the same ways I normally do. I've written many times about that. I also found public references to it. So one of the websites I used to check this is a website called vigilante.pw. And there was a reference to adult fan fiction there, a couple of 100,000 records, which is about line ball with what I found. I found 186,000 unique email addresses, which is often less, a little bit less than the total number of records. And look at my email here. On the 19th of July, I emailed the two addresses which I could find publicly listed, technicalsupport@adult-fanfiction.org and forums@adult-fanfiction.org. I sent them an email and said, my name's Troy Hunt, I run the Ethical Data Breach Service. People regularly send me data from compromised systems which are being traded amongst individuals who collect breaches. Recently, a collection of data allegedly taken from adult fan fiction was sent to me, and I believe there's a high likelihood your site was indeed hacked. The data consists of 186,000 unique email addresses, dates of birth, passwords, and other personal data. I'm happy to send you over everything that has been sent to me so you can verify. Here's partial data of the first three records in the data. Now, what I sent here, and in fact, I did make a mistake here, and I want to be clear about this. The mistake I made was I said, here are usernames, and then here are password hashes. Now, I'm going to explain the mistake and also why it doesn't matter in a moment. This should be sufficient for you to verify the legitimacy of the incident. I wanted to give you the opportunity to respond before I notify my subscribers impacted in the incident. And indeed, if you don't believe the data is legitimate, do please let me know. Now, no matter how I write these messages, there will always be people that say you should have done it differently. It looks like a shakedown. You should have signed it, or you should have done something or other. There are always going to be people who argue. The main thing for me is that I do my best within reason to let people know. Now, in this particular case, I couldn't find like an active Twitter account I could DM or a Facebook account I could DM or anything like that. All I could find was these email addresses. Sent the email to two addresses. Waited 2 weeks, probably just over 2 weeks. And eventually had downtime in this room the other night and went, okay, I'm going to load the data. Now, I loaded the data and then other things happened. So actually, I loaded the data, went to bed, got up, and I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that were said, and I might share some candid opinions about those. What I'm doing here is I'm loading up a forum on adult fan fiction where there's been some discussion about this. Now, I've shared this a few times, so I'm just trying to find it in my Twitter. Adult. Here we go. Now, what's happened is someone who got a notification from Have I Been Pwned, and I believe there were hundreds of notifications sent. Someone has posted and said, I got an email from Have I Been Pwned, and it said, and then there's my description of the breach, is this true and why hasn't it been addressed? Is the site still vulnerable? Now, first thing first, just this message alone should be ringing alarm bells, because what it's saying is someone who is a forum member of this site has posted on this site and said, I got a data breach notification from Have I Been Pwned. They would have been a subscriber. I only ever email my subscribers. And Have I Been Pwned independently said I was in this thing. There's a very high likelihood that their data was actually leaked if they're already a member of the site and then they get notified by Have I Been Pwned. Someone says, not sure, change those passwords, fair comment. Someone else, so the first person was guest concerned person, the second person was guest too lazy to log in. I got this notice from Have I Been Pwned too. All right, two people. And then Demon Goddess joins in. And Demon Goddess, true handle, appears to be an admin. It does actually say admin. And she, I believe it's a she with the goddess handle there, says, no, it's not true. I checked some of the sites linked to for verification. I'm not quite sure what I linked to for verification. And the information they have, they being me, is erroneous, particularly in the hashing used. Now, I shared MD5 hashes. And it is exactly what was in the database. Now, here's the really odd twist, and here's the bit where I made the little mistake I talked about before. When I look at the data, and I've got the data open in front of me here. I'm about to open the data in front of me here. I go into there. I go there, there. Here's the data. It's a CSV file. A little bit unusual to have a CSV. Normally, you'd see a SQL file with inserts and things. In the data, the MD5 hashes were in a column called UPASSMD5, user password MD5. Now, here's where I made the mistake. When I emailed this person and I said, here's the usernames and the passwords, the first bit wasn't usernames. The first bit was, wait for this, the plain text version of the MD5 password. So in this database, there is MD5, which is absolutely bloody useless anyway, and next to it is the plain text password, which was then hashed into MD5. And what I've done is I've obviously replied just a bit too quickly, and I've looked at the user ID column name, and instead of saying this was, you know, user ID was just an integer or something, I've said, look, it's actually this next thing, because I've made a wrong assumption. And frankly, the three values that I shared, which I said were usernames, sound like usernames. So for example, one of them is daffodil and then a number after the end of it. Sounds like a username. But guess what? People choose shit passwords. So here we are. All right, so and incidentally, yes, they are definitely the plain text passwords of the MD5 hashes, because I took a bunch of them, hashed them. Guess what? It matches the MD5 hash just fine. So anyway, this person is a little bit off base here, demon goddess. One would think that instead of scaring users, these companies would contact the site itself. Yeah, well, guess what? Anyway, then she says, found an email from this in my spam folder. Now, okay, granted, it could have definitely gone to the spam folder. She wouldn't notice. Happens to me all the time. Definitely got to cut them some slack for that. But that doesn't change the fact that I did reach out. I tried to make contact. I contacted the legitimate email addresses. I sent it from my Office 365 account, which has a very high resilience to getting through spam. I can't see anything that overtly stands out in the email that should flag it as spam either. But, you know, here we are. I responded to them after looking up the data, none of which exists. Very shouty now. Except obviously for the people who are actually in the forum commenting about the fact that it exists. I asked them to please remove us from their site. Not going to happen because the data is legit. As the data is invalid, not invalid. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. Now, I don't want to sort of read out every single comment here, but someone else chimes in after this. I used a throwaway email for AFF, adult fan fiction, and it was listed in the data breach. Literally no other sites have this email but AFF. You can't claim they're making this stuff up. Fair dinkum, if you're not getting the picture by now, something is missing. Person says, the data I was given was not in the database. I have direct access to the database, and I can search for exact matches. Nothing matched at all. This is the kicker. If you used a throwaway email, chances are I will be deleting you. I delete those as a matter of course. Disposable emails are not allowed here. Now, keep in mind, this is a website where people talk about something which, let's face it, would very likely be embarrassing for them if it were to be leaked. Also, it has been leaked. And even after it's been leaked, and by now the penny should well and truly have dropped for Demon Goddess, even after it's been leaked, it's like, no, we want to be able to positively identify you. This just doesn't make any sense. And then there's this other account called Bronx Wench, and Bronx Wench has chimed in, probably a little bit more balanced in defense of Bronx Wench. That is not the beer, too. That's just a hard word. Now, they think, I haven't read all this. If you read anything on the blog, there is a huge focus on website security. Not going to argue with you. And lots of articles about how stupid everyone is for not doing XYZ. Not going to completely argue with that bit either, or whatever he's pimping. Maybe they read the HTTPS thing. Maybe they think I'm selling certificates. The dead giveaway for me is the sponsors section of his website. If someone's offering me a chance to sponsor him, odds are I don't want his product. I just, you're clutching at straws, man. Man, lady. Now, this also says wench, so I am going to assume a woman again. And anyway, look, it goes on and on and on. And what ultimately happens, I will post a link to this as well. I will also check that it's been archived by archive.org, because hey, this is the sort of stuff that's going to disappear. It's just like, how do you argue against this when it's all there? I'm going to stop reading the forum for a moment, because it's honestly making me need to drink beer. Good beer. And instead, talk about a couple of other things. Now, when other people on the Twitter started seeing this, multiple people reached out to me and said, this site is still vulnerable. To prove the point, some, and I'm not going to share these because of obvious reasons, someone has sent me a screen cap of Chrome with a SQL injection payload in the URL using a union-based injection, and then the content which they were unioning into the statement is appearing down the end of the particular page. So basically, they're managing to append their own arbitrary SQL statement to the end of the one that's executing, putting their own content. That is a SQL injection proof. This person also sent me their entire database schema. The database name is adultfan_archive. The HP underscore review table has 459,833 entries in it. If you're watching this and those numbers reconcile right now, we should be well and truly past the point of arguing about this thing. And now, incidentally, I did actually reply, so the demon goddess did send me back an email saying, you know, look, this is not correct. I sent them the full data breach. This was more than 48 hours ago at the time of recording as well. I sent them the full data breach encrypted in a safe place. I also sent them other irrefutable evidence about here's how the identifiers in the breach match up to identifiers that you can see loaded on the website and how handles and emails and everything match up. Like, this is just not something to argue about. I've not had a reply. It's not in my junk mail. Last thing, someone else, totally different, sent me another union-based SQL injection with the entire payload in the URL. In the source code of this page, I'm now seeing usernames and passwords from the system reflected into the code. So they have unioned the user table onto the original statement and then all the data straight out over the page. This is just beyond any reasonable discussion. I've had someone else reach out to me asking me what I'm going to do about this. Now, the answer at the moment, honestly, is nothing, because I have let them know that there's been an incident. It's been loaded into Have I Been Pwned. I've notified my subscribers. There's no escaping the fact that this has happened. I've done the right thing in terms of the disclosure. It's now up to them. Maybe they won't do anything. Maybe if you're in adult fan fiction, it should be you who is pushing them to disclose the incident. If you're within scope of GDPR, maybe you have access to an SAR, a subject access request. Maybe you have other avenues you can pursue. But honestly, I've done my job with this. I'm on to the next thing. Let's talk about the next thing. There is a breach which I shall, in fact, I've already loaded the data into the database, and I now just need to go and flick the switch as soon as I get up in the morning. There's a breach which is from a website called MyFHA. Now, what this is, I'm just going to get the actual website up. Oh, I can't get the website up because it's gone now. Oh, I'll just explain it. MyFHA is a site which helps people get home loans. Was a site that helps people get home loans. It's gone now. Now, I want to be a bit sympathetic here because I have been speaking to the guy, emailing with the guy involved, and he has been doing the right thing and he's been receptive, and I want to acknowledge that, particularly after having just explained the last incident. I had my FHA data, nearly a million records worth, sent to me some months ago now, and it went into the big pile of stuff that I couldn't immediately verify, and also it didn't look like it was going to be easy to disclose it. I got a big pile of that. Someone else sent me the same data only a few weeks ago. So I had to reach out to the guy. I found a contact details, reached out to him. In fact, I think I got him via LinkedIn originally and said, look, I think there's been a data breach. He has been receptive. He has been like many other organizations who find themselves in this position, particularly smaller ones, who are like, what the hell do we do now? This is not the world we live in. We've had multiple emails to and fro. I disclosed this more than 2 weeks ago to him now. I think it was around about the 17th of July. Don't quote me on that. It's off the top of my head. And we have been going backwards and forwards while I've sort of explained what's happened, made suggestions about what should be done. The data in there is rather personal. And I want to sort of qualify what I mean by rather personal. Now, I think I actually wrote all this up in my, I wrote all this up on my other laptop today because I was presenting from this one. So that the data includes the sorts of information that you need to provide when you're actually trying to get a home loan. That includes things like your income. It includes things like your existing commitments around home loans. It also has a bunch of notes from operators in there that, or they appear to be from operators, around things like your health position, your legal status, going through divorces, things like that. It is very personal data. I don't believe it's been disclosed publicly yet. I have written to him multiple times and said, look, I have an obligation to notify my subscribers, and I've let him know exactly when I'll be doing that, more than 48 hours in advance, which will be tomorrow morning my time. So I would have liked him to have disclosed it a little bit more proactively. I'm going to do that tomorrow. That will probably push him to do the same, and ultimately people will know. The site has been taken offline. I don't know what the original attack vector was. It's not like the AFF one where it's like really obvious SQLite. But of course, that site is now offline. So if it was taken from there, then that's well and truly plugged that hole. He has absolutely positively confirmed the legitimacy of it as well, so we've ticked that box. So another day in data breach land. Now, let me talk about some happier stuff. I wrote 3 blog posts this week, and they were all about new Pluralsight courses. Now, as many of you know, I've been doing a bunch of play-by-play courses for Pluralsight. Play-by-plays are where I sit here, someone else sits there. We talk. I always end up on the right for some reason. I don't know why. But anyway, we talk backwards and forwards like this. And there's cameras recording us, and there's screen recording done as well. Then Pluralsight edits all of it up into a very, very nice video. They're usually about an hour long. They're pretty conversational discussions, so they're not like really, really deep, full-on sorts of things. And we plug them out there into the Pluralsight library, and they usually get really, really good reviews because it is easy watching. It's the sort of stuff that I imagine someone could sit on the train and watch without having to stress too much, because it's not like deep code level or something like that. So I want to talk about these 3 courses, and I'll go fairly briefly on each one. The first one here was Bug Bounties for Researchers. Now, my mate Casey Ellis, who is the founder of Bug Crowd, the very, very successful now, well done Casey, very successful managed bug bounty program service. They run bug bounties for a whole bunch of really massive organizations with names that you recognize, including places like Tesla and Western Union. And when I was in San Fran earlier this year, must have been March, something like that, I don't know. Anyway, he and I recorded Bug Bounties for Companies. Now, that went out quite some time ago. So this is, if you're a company thinking about running a bug bounty, here's the things to think about. And we also recorded Bug Bounties for Researchers. And it took quite a while to get this one out because we actually had a little bit of a problem where Casey's screen wasn't recorded as we went through, and then we had to go and piece together back material again. So apologies, it took a while. All still very relevant. And this one is all about, what if you want to get involved as a researcher in finding bugs? And this, I think, is becoming a much more mainstream accepted, I don't even know if profession's the right word, because a lot of people do this just in their spare time, but there are those who have really carved out a profession from hunting for bugs. So I get to play the straight man, which is probably a pretty fair position because I'm not normally living in the world of bug bounties. And Casey sort of explains exactly what it's like being a researcher hunting for bugs. So he talks about how you find bug bounties. This is not a bug crowd shill either. He talks very generically about the industry. So how do you find bug bounties? How do you make sure you don't get into legal problems? Anyway, also talks about things like how well are some successful bug hunters doing? Because it turns out some people have actually done very, very well out of this. He talks about things like the way they sort of hone their craft and figure out sort of typical patterns and procedures that they then just go and apply to site after site after site after site, which I found very, very interesting. So I think that's a really interesting course. I would love, as I'm sure Casey would as well, to see more people getting involved in bug bounties. Had I more time and had I a different set of priorities, this is exactly what I'd be doing myself, because you get to go and break other people's shit. And not only do you not get into trouble for it, but you actually get rewarded for it. So I think bug bounties are a fantastic thing for researchers. And obviously, I think they're a fantastic thing for companies as well, as I said when we launched the Bug Bounties for Companies course. So go check that one out. Now, the next one here is another one that I did with John Elliott. Now, John Elliott, I also did a course on GDPR with, and that launched, must have been about a month ago. Now, the GDPR one has gone fantastically well. And I think the reason it's going really well is because John is sensational at explaining what can be a very, let's say, wide open to interpretation legislation. It can be something which people are very passionate about and get very, very wrong at the same time. And he just did a beautiful job of explaining the GDPR stuff. Incidentally, he is still doing all the GDPR documentation for Have I Been Pwned as well. I have a sense it is going to be very extensive, because even today I was sending him back a lot of info to questions that he'd asked. Now, this one is about defending against JavaScript keylogger attacks on payment card information. And John has got a very long history in managing payment card systems. Now, to sort of put into perspective, what we mean by JavaScript keyloggers on payment card systems. Unbeknownst to us, whilst we were recording this course, Ticketmaster, so you know the company that sells tickets to concerts and things like this, they were getting very pwned by a JavaScript keylogger on their site. And I talk about this in the launch blog post. And in fact, I've got a little bit of code in here as well that someone had tweeted. And you know, the interesting thing is this was May 7, this person tweeted about malicious code running on the Ticketmaster website. John and I recorded this in early June, and then the whole thing came to light, I think it was pretty much the end of June. Anyway, what it turned out to have happened is that Ticketmaster was embedding this external chatbot service via a JavaScript file. That chatbot service got owned, someone's malicious code got put onto there, and that was then consequently running on the Ticketmaster website. If you recall, back at the start of the year, BrowseAloud, so the accessibility extension had the same thing. The BrowseAloud file got compromised, that was embedded on all these government websites, and suddenly there's a whole bunch of Monero coin mining going on in people's browsers. So anyway, this keylogger's been injected onto Ticketek's website, and it actually turned out that it was a UK bank called Monzo, which identified that Ticketek had been compromised, because Monzo is seeing all of these customers getting their credit cards owned. What's the one thing they've all got in common? They all shopped at Ticketek. So, you know, the really interesting thing here is that this is not a compromise of Ticketek's systems per se. This is a compromise of a third party which they embedded. Now, what could Ticketek have done about it? Well, this is one of the things we talk about in the course. Not Ticketek, of course, because we didn't know it at the time, but we talked about things like BrowseAloud. So they could have used sub-resource integrity, SRI, which says, let's get that external script file we're going to be embedding. We'll create a hash of that exact file, and we'll whack that on as an integrity attribute of the script tag. That would have stopped that file from being changed. But what if that file was then pulling in another file from somewhere else, and that one got changed? Well, then we have things like content security policies. And a CSP can whitelist all of the places a website is allowed to load external content from. Here's where you can get scripts from, images from there, style sheets from there, yada, yada, yada. So we have technologies to address this. And one of the things that continues to blow me away, and I was talking about this just today, it was only a few hours ago, I was doing the modules on content security policies and SRI. And I'm saying to these guys, this is free technology. You get these things from security headers and as an attribute on an HTML tag. You don't have to go and spend a heap of money with some security vendor in order to get this stuff. It's awesome. Use it. And you know how many websites use content security policies? According to Scott Helms, Alexa Top 1 Million Crawl, around about 3% of websites. So that is that one, JavaScript keyloggers on payment card systems. Now, the last one, speaking of Scott, is one called Modern Browser Security Reports. Now, on the day that John and I did the two courses, the GDPR one and the Keylogger one, I also did one with Scott, Scott's first Pluralsight course. And Modern Browser Security Reports, this was a great time to do this course because this was the week where I was in London. If you'd been watching at the time, you might remember that Scott Helm and I both won European Blogger of the Year awards for our respective things. And Report URI won the Best Emerging Technology from the SC Awards Conference. We were very dressed up and presentable. We drank a lot of champagne. Don't remember a lot about the very end of that night. Anyhow, so that was a good week. Like, we had just cleaned up there, which was fantastic. And the very technology that Report URI works on is what we then did the Pluralsight course on. Now, as a sort of macro observation, it's really interesting to see how browsers are evolving around this reporting structure. So for example, the one that I think most people are familiar with is content security policy reporting. You create a policy, if it gets violated, then a report gets sent to an endpoint of your choosing. We would like that endpoint to be report-uri.com. It could be anywhere else. It's just a native feature of the browser. You can send a report to wherever you want. Now that's cool, and that means you can have a really big, massive CSP that covers everything. In fact, the company I was at today has got a ginormous CSP. And then you can report if anything breaks, if anything violates the policy. You can also have a very, very simple content security policy. So one of the simplest ones I can think of is that if you're loading everything over HTTPS, which is what you should be doing, you can have a content security policy report only, and then you can say default source HTTPS. Now, what this says is that every request on the page must be HTTPS. If it is not, don't enforce the fact that it has to be, so, you know, block an HTTP request, but rather report, and then you put a report URI, and you say, just send me a report. This is super cool, because what it means is you can roll out HTTPS everywhere, and if you, I've just had a warning come up about my battery, 20%, we're good. So you roll out your CSP, and then if someone loads the page over HTTPS, but there's something embedded on it over HTTP, you have that report sent to the endpoint of your choosing. Doesn't break anything, but you get to know when you've got something on your site that's a little bit screwy. So there's CSP reports, there's also XSS auditor reports. And this is really, really cool. I've got a link to it in this blog post, but I've got a little demo where it demonstrates what happens when the browser's XSS auditor loads. Now, a lot of people, let me rephrase that, when the browser's XSS auditor fires, a lot of people don't realize browsers can do this, but Chrome, for example, you can have an XXSS header which says, I would like to enforce the XSS auditor of the browser, which basically means that Chrome looks for patterns which it thinks are XSS. Most notably because it sees something in the request, so such as in the query string parameters, which then gets reflected into the body and executes script. And if it sees that, it blocks it. Now, you can not only say block it, which the browser will do by default, but you can say if it gets blocked, send a report to a URI of my choosing. So that's super cool. You can do reporting for HPKP, which is HTTP public key pinning, which we don't really use anymore because you can screw stuff up really bad and Chrome's going to deprecate it anyway. You can do reporting for CAA, Certificate Authority Authorization, where you say at the DNS level, for my domain, these are the CAs that are allowed to issue certificates. And if any CA not listed there tries to issue one, the CA will send you a report. Now, strictly speaking, that's not browser security reporting. That's the CA sending the report. Same principle, though. So Scott and I did that. And I'm hesitating because obviously we have the vested interest in report URI. But I just think this technology is so cool because it is there for free. You get it out of the box and so few people know about it. So I really hope people watch that course and see that and go, yeah, sweet, this is awesome. I would like to do it on my site. Okay, so they were the three blog posts and indeed the three Pluralsight courses this week. My sponsor this week is Gold Security. And you can pay attention to Gold Security without thinking that it's just a weird adult fan fiction thing. It's like, no, these guys are actually doing some good things and they have been a sponsor of mine for quite some time now. So I appreciate them being on there. It's also Black Hat Week at the moment as well. So hopefully they've got a little bit more attention because of the interest people have in the cybers right now. So that's that. I guess sort of wrapping up, I obviously, as I said, this is a Thursday night. I'm going to edit this, push it out tonight, and then push the button on tomorrow. Arvo, this is the 99th weekly update, which means that next week, while I'm in the snow, I hit triple digits. If you think there is something interesting I should do, do some tricks in the snow. I mean, something like interesting related to the updates, let me know. I honestly had not planned anything. Someone a little while ago mentioned, look, I'm getting to the 100. I should do something like a recap on what's changed or something like that. If you have a good idea that's insightful and interesting, then please let me know. Whack it in the comments on my blog post. Look, thank you very much for watching this one. I hope it's been interesting. I know I spent a lot of time on the AFF thing because that was just one of these things where we just, frankly, we need to do better. We need to do better as organizations holding people's personal data, with protecting it, and then responding to people correctly when things do go wrong. And I've said multiple times now, I think the general public sentiment has moved from being aghast at the fact there's been a data breach, and now we're aghast when an organization handles it poorly. We're more accepting of the fact that shit happens and breaches happen, but we're much less accepting of when organizations handle it poorly. On that note, thank you very much for watching, and I will come to you from the snow next week with episode 100.